Chapter 5. "Well, this town is clear, thanks to this lady right over here," said a big barrel-chested man as he lifted an equally giant mug of beer into the air. He looked to the young, fiery, red-headed young woman who sat in the corner of the pub. She grinned at the foolhardy man. The big man was all Irish. He had a hearty laugh that bellowed throughout the whole town, it seemed. He sported a black bowler hat that he almost always was seen wearing. He turned the beer up, leaving most of the froth on the large red mustache that covered his mouth and all of his upper lip. His mustache continued until it reached a curved-up point just short of his cheekbones.
"All right, Carbre, that'll do," said the young woman in her thick Irish tongue.
"Tell me, do these things haunt the rest of the world as they do here?" asked a patron that was standing near the counter.
"Yes, sir," shouted a man sitting at the table beside the young woman. "These bloody creatures are everywhere."
He too had a large pitcher of beer in his hand. He smiled, showing a set of whitened teeth through a heavy dark beard that reached down to his enormous chest.
"Yes, Oliver is right," she glanced at him for a minute. "Aha, boys, write that down. I have been deemed right by Milady Clodagh." She rolled her eyes.
"However, we are seeing fewer and fewer vampires around these days," she added.
"Well, we have not had any trouble until recently," said the barkeep.
"Yes, they seem to come in spurts like this one here.
Tell me, young lady, are you truly the daughter of Sarah, the first hunter?" asked the barkeep.
"No, I am afraid I am just her granddaughter, and my grandfather was," she paused for affect,
"Zorro,"
she said with a wide grin. The crowd gasped.
"Give them anything they want to drink, and I will pay for it," shouted an older woman sitting across the room.
The crowd cheered its approval.
"Tell us about Zorro," shouted a young man of possibly 20 years of age.
"Yes, we have heard of his legend," said one of the young man's friends.
"Oh, well, there is so much to tell," said Clodagh, with a gleam in her eye.
She loved her grandfather as if he were her dad. He was a magnificent man, even in his 80s. He was stout and courageous and debonair. He was and will always be the hero of the young Clodagh. His eyes dazed as she stared at the silenced room. He was everything you have heard or read about, and more. The room erupted with cheers. "In fact, this is his," she said as she lifted her saber into the air, and again the room went wild. Offers to buy the sword came flooding in her direction, but she laughed as she replaced the heirloom on her side. Zorro was indeed the legend everyone had heard of. However, Alejandro Vega was a brilliant businessman and was responsible for running and operating his own grandfather's fortune. He owned businesses and properties all over Spain, Mexico, and Europe, and his sole heir was the young woman that carried his sword to this day. Then the night finally met its end for Clodagh. She raised her mug one last time and declared the day done as she left the pub. She traveled to the inn that put her and her friends up for the night. She stepped into her small room. She was tired, even for a girl of 23. Hunting and killing vampires was a tiring occupation. She pulled the sword from off her side. She looked at it. It was a gift from her grandfather, Alejandro Vega, the grandson of Diego Vega. He had taught her everything he knew of the sword, and for the first 16 years of her life, she traveled with him and her mother Sarah. That is, until Sarah started having problems. It seemed her mind was leaving her, or so she thought. She had begun to see things that were not there. She wanted to part from Alejandro, so he took to the fight alone. Clodagh was never given any reasons for the separation. They considered her too young to understand such matters. Then Sarah ran off with her daughter, Clodagh's mother. And then she was found by a group of vampires who killed her in retaliation for the vampire Sarah had slain many years earlier.
Clota stayed with Zorro while Sarah took off on a self-imposed exile, locking herself away, even from her closest circle of friends, such as Randolph Carter, who had swore allegiance to her more than 50 years earlier. Carter had begun traveling on his own, looking for the last resting place of Dr. Henry Jekyll. His journeys took him to Africa, America, Great Britain, Canada, and many others. He had searched for more than 40 years until he gave up about 5 years ago when he decided to reconnect with Sarah, who had shut herself into her large house, directing others who had taken up her fight against the undead. All the while, Carter had managed to fall in love with a young woman who was more than 20 years younger than he, and he and she had a son together, and for a while he settled into teaching and researching the occult. On occasion, he would be called by Zorro or Sarah to help search out some creature that had been spotted, but for the most part, his adventure days of stalking vampires were over. He had also written more than 30 books, which had by now made Zorro, Sarah, and he household names. Clota turned the blade over to look at the engravings on it. She loved the way the light reflected from the blade. She laid the sword on her small bed that was pushed against the wall. She had been on her own for more than 3 years now. She had met Oliver, her kilt-wearing Scottish friend, on a trip to Scotland. She was going on a tip she received that said Victoria had been spotted there. Her mother warned her against going up against Victoria alone because Victoria was traveling with Hyde. She went and found only a handful of winged creatures tearing into a small village, and in the center was a large Scotsman tearing through several beasts with almost no effort. Once he finished, he turned to see Clota standing behind him. He looked the young woman up and down. She was wearing a rather tight outfit made of leather. It was colored red and black. "Are you a vampire also?" he asked in his thick native accent. "No, I am not," she grinned as she looked the big man up and down. "So what do you Scotsmen wear under the kilt?" she said as she made her way to where he was standing. "Well, now, I guess you'll just have to find out." Clota grinned. She liked him already. "You're way too old for me, Pops," she said with a chuckle. "Who are you kidding? One night with me, lass, and there will never be another." "Pretty confident, aren't you?" she moved closer now. "Hey, I do wear a kilt." Clota looked at the remains of the dead vampires. "You did good here," she said, as she stood beside the man. He was every bit 6'3", which towered over her 5'8".
"Well, thanks, little one. And who might you be?"
"I am the granddaughter of Sarah the Huntress."
"Sarah?
Oh, wait, the Huntress. I read a book about her once. Are you really her granddaughter?"
"I am, and I want you to come and join me. Is this just so you can see what I have under me kilt?"
Clota grinned.
"Of course," she winked.
He laughed a hearty laugh. He definitely liked this girl, and they have been friends ever since. Then she met the bowler-wearing Irishman on a trip to see her grandmother. There were some brazen vampires that wanted to take out the old huntress, and Carbra stepped in and aided the older woman in defeating the creatures. He immediately gained the affection from Sarah and Clota. They brought him on and taught him how to fight a vampire war. However, both knew that there was something more to this man, something different, something otherworldly. Outwardly, he appeared to be just an ordinary Irishman, if ordinary could describe an Irishman. But inside, something was different about him. She felt it immediately. She had traveled with a man who was also a wolf, and Carbra had the same quality and feel, but she knew he was no wolf. But there was something about him. Sarah trusted, and in turn, Clota trusted him, and they welcomed him to be one in their army of vampire fighters. Sarah, however, warned Clota of not surrounding herself with friends. She was told of two close friends that had died early on in her endeavors to rid the realm of vampires, Tom Sawyer and Adam. Sarah remembered them to the very end. They were her champions. Clota made her way to where a chair was sitting. She sat down, placing her right leg over her left. She began to unzip her boot. She thought a lot about her grandmother's stories of how she met her grandfather and how he had literally swept a young woman that was inexperienced in love off her feet. Clodagh was told that her own mother was born somewhere in Hungary and had traveled with them as well. Then they told of how they were training her to fight the beast. She did not take to the lifestyle and opted for an education instead. So she was sent abroad to learn and study in hopes that she would one day take over the Vega financial empire. However, some vampires found out about her. They sought her out and killed her, but not before she gave birth to Clodagh, the heir to the vampire hunters. She was but an infant when Sarah retrieved her from London. Then she was then trained by the legend Zorro when she was but a young girl. She was taught the arts of the sword. Then at 13, she told her grandfather that she would be the first female Zorro and that she would fight for the oppressed, as he and his father had done. She pulled the leather knee-high boot from off her foot, the cool air blowing through the window from off the sea. It felt good on her tired feet. She found the television remote and flipped it on to a news channel. There was another attack last night at the house of Wanda Mercy. It was the most brutal so far. Clodagh said in silence, "Wanda Mercy?" That was an alias her grandmother had used on more than one occasion, especially with all the books popping up from all over the world about the history of the Dark Lands. Sarah was a very popular icon. She had reached a folk hero status, a legend in her own time. She actually knew all of the legends of old. And now if this was Sarah, she is now dead. I need to confirm this. I am sure Quincy would know. She reached for the phone that sat on the night table. She quickly dialed the numbers and then, "Hello," a voice on the other end said. "Quinn, it's Clodagh. I just heard that Wanda was killed. Is it the Wanda we both know?" "You heard already? We weren't sure where to reach you." "We?" "Yes, the Carters are traveling to Ireland to find you. What about Grandpap? Does he know?" "I am sorry to have to tell you over the phone, but he was killed also." Clodagh went silent. She fought back tears. "Where? How?" "It seems he was in semi-retirement in a town outside of London. When he hadn't checked in with me, I sent the Carters to check on him, and he was found. That is why Randolph went to see your grandmama." "Who was it, Quinn?" "Well, I was just beginning to start work on that. I have the recorder I kept at your grandmom's, and..." "All right. Let me know as soon as you find anything out. I will have Oliver go to the airport and wait for the Carters." She was numb when she placed the phone back onto its cradle. Her grandmother had shown her how to shut down her emotions. She had led a solitary life most of her years. She had shut herself in and now was dead. Clodagh removed her other boot and stood up. She stopped and picked up the phone. "Room 21, please." "Aye," said Room 21. "Oliver, I need to talk to you." "I will be there in a minute, lass." In only a matter of seconds, Oliver was knocking on her door. Clodagh opened it instantly. Immediately, Oliver saw the countenance she wore. "Are you busy?" she asked softly.
No, she can wait. Why, what has happened?" asked the big Scotsman, glancing back to his room.
"They got her, Oliver and Zorro too. They killed them both."
"Ah, I don't see how that could be true. I mean, Zorro, well, he..."
"Oliver, he was almost 90.
Oliver stared for a minute before replying. "What do you need from us?"
"Carter and his son are heading here to break the news to me when they arrive at the airport. Can you bring them here? I can use their help in finding out who the vampires were that did this."
"Of course, love, whatever you need."
"Thank you, my friend, and if you would tell Carbra, I want to be alone for the rest of the night.
You do know he will have his feelings hurt if I tell him. You know how sensitive he can be."
I think he will be fine, she chuckled as she pushed the door shut. She then turned to face her empty room. That's when the tears began to fall.